Your news, your views, your values. This is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM.
The opinions presented on the Healthy Steps show are the evidence-based opinions of Dr. Fred Harvey, the callers, and his guests. These are not the opinions of the staff, the volunteers, or the board of WMNF. The information provided on the show is not intended to diagnose or treat any disease. There is no implied patient-physician relationship in these calls. The nature of the calls is educational and informational only.
Good morning to you. Yes, you, my dear friend, whom I only see in my dreams, but I know I will find in my heart every Monday because we share the same wavelength, WMNF Tampa, the only station that they stream in Yamatsu, Hirosaka, and you can stream us as well at WMNF.org. Well, spank my butt and call me Sally. Today is Ask Me Anything Monday. I always feel like we're spelunking in a gold mine on AMA Monday. The questions that your listeners ask are always a fist-sized nugget that make the Healthy Steps radio show sparkle. Okay, my companions, if you have any questions or any related health concerns, give us a call at 813-239-9663. Irina's sitting in the control room awaiting your call with bated breath. Again, that number is 813-239-9663. You can also send an email to dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. Good morning to you, Dr. Harvey. Ask Me Anything Monday always seems to have legs of its own, so let me get out of the way and watch where this show goes. It's all yours, Dr. Fred. Take it away.
Happy Monday, Bill, and thanks for that wonderful intro. Missed you last week, but it was always great working with Sean, too.
That's always a hoot. Can't go wrong. Oh,
yeah, and actually, I want to thank all my listeners because you did a great job supporting the station and this show. Thank you so much. We got up to $2,248 out of $2,300. So I need about a $50 pledge today to finish it off and get us over the top. That would be great. $100 would even be better. But whatever you can do today to keep it rolling and keep this station very healthy, let me know. Let the phone bank know. I know it's just Irene today. I believe it's Irene. So give us a call and let us know, or go online and hit the tip jar if you like what you're hearing. Thanks again. So, today is a really wonderful day again. There's so much happening, so much new information that we get to think about all the time, and really to help us grow stronger, to get healthier. You know, sometimes, though, our government interferes with our plans to be healthy. And we're having something come up here really shortly that is a government plan that disrupts all of us. What I'm talking about is every second Sunday in March, we have that dreaded and deadly thing called jumping forward. The daylight savings time. We lose an hour of sleep this coming Sunday. And what we know about this is clinical research has shown that people die from this. There are more car wrecks, there are more heart attacks, and more mood changes. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine talks about short and long-term risks for this in a statement published in October 2020 in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine. So we have this information, but for some reason, our legislators are absolutely bound up with doing idiocy. They don't actually pass laws that are helpful to us. They're barely even able to keep government funded. But, you know, this is an easy one. All they need to do is pass a law that says we never jump forward in the spring again. We just don't do this. It kills people. Why are we killing people purposefully with a stupid law that has no benefit? I'd love to know what is motivating them to keep it this way. Who's paying them to disrupt our country? I mean, what's going on here? It's a weird, I mean, let's take it to conspiracy level, but seriously, why can't they do this? The evidence has been out for decades and it's actually been published and republished, yet we still have to put up with it. You know, Florida has at least tried to stop it, but they're going the wrong direction. They want us to stay sprung forward. that's for me, that seems very disruptive. We should just stay on regular time, leave it on regular time, and not keep doing this to ourselves. We don't need to have it light until 10:30 at night because somebody might want to spend more time on the beach. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Let's actually have the day oriented for people who like to work. And most of us don't work at 8:30 at night, so we don't really need light then. Let's stop the madness. 19 states have introduced legislation, but the federal government just won't do it. Only Hawaii gets exempt. And I think the native indigenous areas of Arizona are exempt because they don't really care about this stupid thing that white men created to make capitalism work better. In any event, this is an issue. I've got great contention with it, and I'm really annoyed with the fact that we've got this continuous problem. That is a health risk. I mean, I'm about having people healthy. And if we're going to have a thing happen next weekend that will cause a significant increase in heart attack death, a significant increase in car wrecks and injuries, like, what is the purpose of this? Okay, I'll get off my soapbox and recognize that we have callers.
We do indeed. We've got Gary and Nina on the line. And I'm also going to give on out the phone number that people can call to participate in this show. It is Ask Me Anything Monday. So your questions are very pertinent. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. Irene definitely is in, and she's taking your calls and looking forward to talking with you. You can also continue sending your emails to dj@wmnf.org. And I'm also going to redirect you if you want to send your donations on in, and we encourage you, believe me, we do. Give us a call at 813-238-8001. We've got operators standing by for you there as well. Let's go to Gary. Good morning to you, Gary. How are you doing?
Well, good morning. And it's been a couple weeks I didn't call you guys. I don't have a question, but I kind of want to spread what I've been doing to the audience. And this, when I brush my teeth, I use an electric toothbrush and I floss, and then I put my brush in Listerine or some kind of antiseptic, and oh my God, it's nice. So you know what? People are thinking of ways to clean the brush for the next day. You just don't put it in hot water. You put it in mouthwash for the next day. And it's a good, healthy way. Do you agree, Doc?
That's a very interesting statement there, Gary. Putting your toothbrush in the mouthwash may kill off some of the bacteria that have gotten stuck on the bristles.
You got it. And I've been doing it for a couple years now. I think I saw a little thing on TV about that, and what a way to go.
Yeah, a lot of people can't deal with mouthwash, though, so after you've done that disinfection, you might want to rinse the mouthwash off the toothpaste so you don't get any in your mouth. The alcohol solvents and other things in there can be disruptive to your mouth flora and to make it more dry and more susceptible.
Now, is there another way besides the stream?
Is there another way besides Listerine?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are many non-alcohol-based mouthwashes. There's a system called Biotene that's an enzyme-based cleaner. There's a bunch out there. You just have to look at the health food stores, Whole Foods, Earth Origins, Sprouts. They all have some of these alternative mouthwashes that don't damage the skin of your mouth.
Well, you know, I say Listerine, but I have other products too. I don't use alcohol products, but mostly about mouthwash at work. So thank you, and have a nice day, you guys.
You too. Thanks for calling, Gary.
Always good talking to Gary. He's got quite interesting opportunities to share his thoughts with us, and he's got great things to say. Let's go to
Nina. Very positive attitude, too.
You got to love that. That is so true there, Doctor. And Nina, she's a regular as well. Let's say good morning to Nina. Hey there.
Good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. Just a quick question. I have a friend who's weaning off of mirtazapine, and I was wondering if something would help with that, like L-tryptophan or, something, amino acid or something that would help if wean them off.
That's a good question. Mirtazapine is in the class of medicines they call antidepressants. I'm not sure, is it... it's a tetracyclic antidepressant. So it actually works to increase release of serotonin and norepinephrine. And so you might want to actually have some tryptophan on board to help recover your internal levels of serotonin if it's been used up. And that may help with the transition off of the medication. But and tyrosine helps to make norepinephrine, so that may actually help you improve mood that way. However, there is caution that using these with the antidepressant while it's still on board could cause risk, but I have not seen that in 20 years of doing this kind of weaning and helping people be supported while they're coming away from that medication or medications like it.
Right, right. So either or, L-tryptophan or tyrosine?
Either or and.
okay. All right. And 500 milligrams, how much of about each? You wouldn't want to do too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't dose it out too high. So I don't have any specific recommendations on how to do this, just that those I've witnessed actually help people get through the process.
Okay. All right. I'll let them know. Okay. I appreciate it, Dr. Harvey. And I have donated and I may go back again to the trip jar.
Thank you, Nina.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you very
much,
Nina. I really appreciate that. You're my favorite caller today. Let's go to Mary in Englewood. Good morning to you, Mary.
Hello, doctor.
Hi, Mary.
I have diverticulitis. About in 2009, I had colon cancer, and I had 18 inches of my colon removed. And so when they told me I needed my colon removed for the tumor, then he also told me I have diverticulitis. I have very excruciating pain, I guess, probably from the food sometimes I eat, and that's what aggravates it. So I take aloe vera juice when I do get an attack, and that seems to calm it down. And then I watch, well, then they say to go on a liquid diet for a few days. So I do that, but I was saying, if there's anything else that I could do.
So your recognition that the flares in your discomfort occur seemingly related to food is probably quite accurate. And
correct.
So one of the some of the major triggers for it are a diet like the standard American diet, which is low in fiber. And alcohol can also trigger this kind of symptom. I have witnessed that excessive amounts of dairy and gluten and many other foods trigger people. And it really is highly individual, but some of the major categories are alcohol, lack of fiber, pasteurized dairy and gluten. So are you getting good fiber? Are you using much alcohol? And do you use gluten and dairy?
Dairy, as far as I don't do milk, I do eat cheese. And then alcohol, just so often, not an everyday thing for me. Also, I was wondering too, I was reading about probiotics. Do you think that would help it or not?
Well, the first rule for any functional medicine course of therapy is to eliminate the problems that are causing it. So do you use gluten? Do you eat pasta? Do you eat bread, crackers, cookies?
Now that you said that, I am on a keto diet, K-E-T-O.
Yes.
So I'm not eating any bread or no pasta.
That's good. And so how many servings of vegetables do you get a day?
Probably not enough. I did notice lately. Now, I've been eating a lot of raw vegetables, and I'm just wondering if that's triggering it.
It could be. I like cooked vegetables. I'm not a raw foodist, but I do like salad, too. So I do about a 50-50 of raw to cooked. And I try to get, for my size, I try to push 8 servings of vegetables, solid or green leafy, plus a serving or two of starchy vegetables and 2 servings of fruit a day. It's a plant-based diet, but I do eat meat. And you can do ketogenic plant-based, but you just need to eat your leafy greens and other solid vegetables. Just don't do as much of the root vegetables and high glycemic fruit.
Okay. What kind of fruit, too? I would do water and then put, like, slices of oranges and lemon in it. And what do you think about that?
Well, that's fine for flavor, but you're not eating the fruit. You can eat oranges. You can eat berries. You can eat, grapes.
With diverticulitis, I can't have any seeds, so I don't
eat. Well, that's a fallacy.
Oh.
That's a made-up fallacy. The seeds that are problematic are the ones that cause sensitivity, like peanuts. They're highly reactive. They trigger people's sensitivities. And strawberries also trigger sensitivity. And so strawberry seeds, you know, I've never seen a pathology report in 30 years of practice where the pathologist said, oh, look, there's the strawberry seed in the middle of that diverticulum. That's what caused this diverticulitis. Oh, look, there's a piece of peanut stuck in that diverticulum. That's what caused this diverticulitis. Never. I haven't seen it. 30 years. It's not really true. It's food sensitivities that trigger this, and then lack of good fiber. You need some good soluble fiber to make your bowels work. So you want to get okra and oatmeal and apples and pears, bananas and sweet potatoes, zucchini. And beans, all of these things actually produce better bowel movements. And then you can take a probiotic with it, definitely, with those kind of good foods, because the probiotics actually eat the soluble fiber in those foods and turn it into beneficial chemicals for your colon called short-chain fatty acids.
Okay.
How's that work for you, Nina?
That sounds good.
That's juicing.
Is juicing good? For you?
Well, it's a way of getting a good glass of sugar. I eat fruit. I eat vegetables. I'm not really much into juicing because our bodies were designed to engage with the food with teeth. In doing so, we combine our oral bacteria with the food. It starts digesting the food with us. And the fibers that we chew help to floss our teeth naturally. If we ate a real human diet, which is in the vicinity of 35, 40 grams of fiber a day, we wouldn't need to brush our teeth so much.
How about carrots?
Carrots are a wonderful food. They clean your teeth. They fill your belly with beautiful orange carotenes that really change the nature of your body. So, yeah, I would eat carrots. I think they're wonderful. Celery.
And
cucumbers.
Okay, all those are good for me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Can you talk to a secretary and call back and make an appointment to see you?
Can I make an appointment to see you?
Sure you can, but not through here. You need to go to Functional Medicine Fonda.
Okay.
Lovely week, Mary. I hope this helped.
Okay. All right. I'll call back and... up to your secretary, make an appointment to see you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a lovely week.
You too.
Instead, Mary, maybe send an email to dj@wmnf.org and we can handle it through that. And I'm going to encourage anybody who has a question to send that email to dj@wmnf.org or continue to call 813-239-9663. Irene's in the studio room to take your call. Again, that number is 813-239-9663. And my lovely wife, Elaine, will tell you I have no shame, so I'm going to give the office number for your call on in to give a donation. That number is 813-238-8001. Would love to hear from you on that line as well. Back to you there, Dr. Harvey.
Yes, Mary, that would be lovely. Please stop by the tip jar or call that number and put us over the top for this last fund drive. That would be beautiful. And thank you in advance for that. Some other interesting thing is coming up. And there's, you know, we're dealing with measles again. Measles is showing up. You know, there are a lot of people that have vaccine hesitancy. And it's understandable. There's been so much disinformation on both sides over the last several years that have made people really leery about what to do. Measles isn't something to laugh at, though. And it can cause some really serious illness in adults. And that's the concern, is like adults can really get some difficult challenges and can be hospitalized. Like one in five people who gets measles is hospitalized. One out of 1,000 gets encephalitis, which is a brain inflammation and brain swelling. And that could lead to brain damage. And one to three out of 1,000. So still about 1 out of 1,000. Is people may die. And so prior to doing measles vaccines back in 1965, the measles took 600 lives in America every year. And the prior way to give these measles vaccines was with a measles vaccine, and then they gave other vaccines too. There's a rubella vaccine and a mumps vaccine, but now they're all combined into one, the measles, mumps, rubella. And unfortunately, you know, mumps doesn't really cause much problem. It can, but it's not really prevalent these days. Rubella can cause some significant problems for the fetus in utero. So mother who would get sick with rubella can really have the child in utero would get damaged. So it does make sense to protect your child against getting these kind of problems in utero. So it's terrible when an adult gets this illness. So it's really, it gives us some consideration about what we can do to prevent. And obviously a vaccine can prevent, but you don't want to give a vaccine if someone's ill. You don't want to give a vaccine if somebody's just recently recovered from an illness. And you don't want to give numerous vaccines on one occasion, because that challenges the immune system in ways that it's never been challenged previously. But, you know, measles kind of looks initially like a flu. You got a high fever, cough, a runny nose, and red watery eyes. And then 3 to 5 days later is when the rash begins. So you don't notice the rash initially. So this is a good reason to really just talk about upper respiratory infection and what to do to prevent infecting other people. Courtesy and common sense would say, stay home if you have a runny nose, if you have a fever, if you have a cough. If you must go out, put a mask over your face, because you don't want to spread infectious droplets to other people. They'll get caught on your mask. When you come home, throw the mask away. If you don't have to go out, don't go out. Stay home if you have a fever, because you are dangerous. You are a vector for illness. You are a public health issue. And so it's a really good idea to consider staying home when ill, no matter what you think you might have, because there's no reason to share this with other people. Think about it. That's not the kind of sharing we want. We want sharing the love, not the illness, okay? So common sense, wear a mask if you have symptoms, if you must go out. If you have symptoms, stay home if it's at all possible. We have a caller.
We do indeed. I've got Jared from St. Pete on the line, and I'm going to give on out the number again. Give us a call at 813-239-9663 or continue sending your emails to dj@wmnf.org. Irene is waiting to take your call. So that number again is 813-239-9663. Good morning, Jared. How are you today?
Oh, good. Thanks. How are you doing? Hey, Doc. It's long time no hear.
Hey,
doing?
Jared. How are you?
I'm good. Good. It's Jerry, like Jerry Lewis.
Oh, Gary. Okay. Oh, Jerry, yeah, not Jared. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, Doc. Speaking of sharing the love, you're right on target, and you were talking about non-contamination. So let's say you meet somebody, you know, who doesn't have the COVID shots, and you have it. Can you briefly discuss like potential detoxification or potential contamination issues between two, you know, intimate people?
Well, so someone who's had the shots has a mechanism inside where they create COVID spike protein. There's a possibility, and there's been a couple of articles that have actually shown some likelihood of shedding spike protein as you exhale. And so you might be actually risking triggering somebody else's COVID-19 by exhaling spike protein on them or sharing it through saliva.
Just by breathing on them.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, if you have an infection, you can be shedding spike protein or any other viral particle, whether it's a different coronavirus or an adenovirus or a flu virus. You know, you're going to shed viral particles. You're going to shed little chunks of RNA and DNA. And so these things can be irritating. So, and they can be infectious, depending on where you are. So, you know, the likelihood of somebody who's had a shot a year ago of sharing spike protein is highly, highly unlikely. But right after the shot, it's really likely. But the thing is, we don't even know if it does anything. But we do know that the spike protein is responsible for causing the inflammation syndrome called COVID-19. Because you have to remember, COVID-19 is not an infection. Beta SARS-CoV-2 is an infection. COVID-19 is an inappropriate human immune response to a simple viral infection.
Great. Perfect.
And so, yeah, it's such a dynamic field of inquiry right now. We're learning so much more about how these things work. That we have to really wonder what is overall risk. And really, looking back at the entire pandemic and knowing what was revealed, the risk is being toxic. The risk is being overweight, obese, having medical conditions. And the medical conditions are generally caused by toxicity.
Thanks.
So welcome.
Appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too, Jerry.
All right.
Sorry about that, Jerry, but that happens. We've gone dark in here, so I'm going to give on out the phone number and email address again while you scan over what's come on the email box already. Give us a call at 813-239-9663 and participate in the Ask Me Anything Monday. You can also continue sending those emails to dj@wmnf.org. And of those emails, what have you got for us, Doctor?
So, Peter writes in and says, I take 1,000 milligrams of time-release vitamin C, a multivitamin, and probably this is the reason I never get sick, because of taking these and possibly a time-release factor. And he started taking some fish oil because I recommended it. How many supplements should a man in his early 60s take, and what should they be? Somebody with no major health issues. I recommend that because over the last 100 years or so, we've depleted the nutrient value of our foods, both organic and conventional agriculture, do a soil test and treat methodology where they break up the soil microbiome and continuously remove the nutrients from the soil, never replenishing them except by throwing bags of stuff on top. In the conventional world, it's synthetic junk they throw on it. And in the natural world, it's composted stuff. And so essentially, they're just adding nutrients back into the soil that have already been stripped out. And so everybody needs a good multivitamin and multimineral, because even the minerals are depleted. I think vitamin D is really important because we spend a lot of time inside and our immune systems are challenged, and most people are a bit limited in vitamin D. I believe that because we don't get enough good omega-3s from our diet any longer, we really should probably take a fish oil supplement, one that's clean. IFOS, International Fish Oil Standard, is a third party an analysis that tells us that the fish oil doesn't have the toxic metals, the petrochemical toxins, and rancid fat in it, so that you can be sure you're getting a good quality product that's going to help you and not damage you. I think also a probiotic is probably good, unless you're eating a lot of home naturally fermented foods. And vitamin C is not a bad thing to take, and especially in times of high virus circulation like winter. But another way you get really good vitamin C is by eating your 8 servings of vegetables, 2 servings of fruit a day. If you can get that much in, you're getting a really good amount of natural vitamin C. And so, yeah, these are all very good things. But, you know, you can disrupt this whole thing by drinking just 2 12-ounce cans of soda per week. Recent publication in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition will tell us that just 2 cans of soda actually erases your healthy heart gains made by exercise. How about that? 2 12-ounce cans of pure sugar will cause you to lose your heart health gains from exercise for a whole week. Here's another one that goes right hand in hand. Don't try to dodge the soda issue by going diet, because artificially sweetened carbonated beverages were associated with higher hemoglobin A1C. And that is the protein marker that we watch for sugar control. So it's associated with uncontrolled diabetes, high hemoglobin A1C, and retinopathy means destruction of your eye. That's diabetes retinopathy. It kills your eye so you can't see, you get blind. And it's also associated with obesity. So yeah, you know, switching from sugared soda to artificially sweetened soda is just as or more deadly than drinking the sugar. And here's one from Daniel. What does Daniel say? What causes bulging veins in legs? Well, that could be a lot of things, but usually it's associated with a defect in the valves, in the veins, in the legs. And that can happen for a lot of things. Genetics has something to do with it. Pregnancy can work on that, because the weight of the baby on the pelvic blood vessels ends up having a backup of pressure there, resulting in sometimes destruction of those valves. And so best treatment, walking, because walking will help actually move that blood out of your legs. Another thing you could do is wear support hose, and then you can do some things to support the blood vessels. A wonderful antioxidant called rutin, a flavonoid that comes from buckwheat and some other things. Buckwheat is a real high source of rutin. That can really be helpful for the lining of the legs. And diosmin is a antioxidant that comes from the rind of citrus. So if you peel your orange, don't peel all the white off, because that contains bioflavonoids, specifically diosmin, that will actually help with vascular health. So this is why it's so important to eat a rainbow, because these phytochemicals actually change our health risk.
Okay, we've got a caller coming on in. I've got Pete from Palm Harbor there. Good morning, Pete.
Hi, Doctor. I have a couple of quick questions.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate your time. What about eczema? What causes eczema? I didn't know I had it, but I have it on my face. And the reason I found that,
you can recognize eczema from the red skin and the scales. Yeah. It's like facial dandruff or dandruff of your arm or wherever you get your eczema. It's an exfoliation. The skin divides fast and falls off, and so you get flakes.
Yeah.
And it happens because your skin cells get triggered. They get irritated by something. There's something inflammatory causing the problem. And sometimes it comes from triggering your own system. There's something called atopic eczema. These people have an intrinsic problem with allergy. Usually they will have nasal allergies, asthma, and other things associated with it. But many people just get eczema, and that can be a variety of things, from a lack of good omega fatty acids, or a trigger like pasteurized dairy or gluten, or a toxin like mold.
So gluten and then dairy also as well, maybe, huh?
Yes. Especially pasteurized dairy, because that creates an allergen called a glycated protein. It doesn't occur in normal milk. And so our body recognizes this glycated protein as a fungus and it attacks it. And so pasteurized dairy creates lots of our immune problems, including probably tonsillitis on a recurrent basis.
So how would I calm that down or get rid of it, hopefully? I've had it for many years and it's really getting annoying.
I'd say eliminate dairy and gluten and add fish oil into your diet if you don't do it already.
Yeah, I do take fish oil. What about probiotics?
Probiotics are a great thing too. Reset your gut immune system.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll keep going with that. One other quick question. I'm getting ready to head out on a multi-country, hopefully round the world type thing. So what kind of vaccines would I need in order to, you know, I mean, I think they're required in certain countries.
Yeah, I think the way to do that is go to the CDC website on vaccines and get their recommendations, which are the most current for each country, and then make your plans and head over to someplace like Passport Health, whose whole purpose is giving vaccines to people that want to travel.
Oh, really? Okay, Passport Health. Great. Okay. All right, Doc, thanks. I appreciate it. I did make a contribution last week during the drive. So
thank you, my friend.
Well deserved. I would love to triple it or quadruple it, but I can't. But
thank you
for everything. You've been a great help to everyone.
Have a great week and have a great trip.
Oh, well, I'm planning it. We'll see.
Certainly. Bye-bye. Have a safe and wonderful trip there, Pete. And again, thank you very much for your donation. No small amount is too small. We appreciate every sou, I think is the phrase. Got a couple of emails that we've been sending on over to you, so I'll let you scan those again while I give on out the number. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. Or continue those emails to dj@wmnf.org. Back to you there, Doctor.
So here's one. Jay asked, I had mentioned the mold problem in my house. How did I discover it? What were my symptoms? And is there a mold company I would recommend? So the problem became apparent when I had a water backup in my master bathroom. And I realized the way it happened, it had to be a chronic leak. So I called a mold inspector and plan for them to come out. In the meantime, I tested my body and the HEPA filter in my bedroom and found out that I had mycotoxins in my body that matched the HEPA filter in my bedroom. And so I know I had a home mold contamination. The first company I called did not find the source of the mold in my body because they found some yeast, but they did not find the black mold. That took a second visit from a mold remediation company called Certified Mold Assessments. They're in Tampa. I met them at the first mold conference I went to, and they do a very effective job. Two men came to my house and spent 6 hours. They used endoscopy tools, little cameras on snakes, and put them behind the walls and found the black mold where I need to do my remediation. My symptoms were primarily agitation, anxiety, irritability, and brain fog. Also, I had some regular nausea. I would often wake up in the morning and have a vomiting event. That doesn't occur since I've moved out of the house. It was a very trying time. And for anybody who's having vague symptoms that a doctor is not telling you what's going on, you could have mold at your house. And it's worth to look inside your air handler and see if you see any spots of little black stuff. It's worth it to look at your air conditioning vents to see if there's anything that looks like sooty dust coming around the edges of the vents. There are so many places mold can hide. And you can check out real-time laboratories in Texas. They are the only company that has a FDA-approved, patented way of looking at these things. There are other companies that look that also do a very good job, but this is a patented method that I've used, and they also will do one on your house so you can actually compare the results to find out if it really is coming from your dwelling.
Keep going with those emails.
I'll keep going. Yeah, Linda asks, what foods to avoid with autoimmune disease? Well, there are big, broad classes, and I talk about them all the time. So pasteurized dairy or all dairy, gluten, and maybe even extend that to all grains. If you want some grain, rice is pretty good, but you got to do it organic, because if you're doing not organic grain, rice, it's likely you're getting arsenic, because many old cotton fields are now rice fields, and rice is very good at detoxifying the land and providing the toxin for your food. And so you'll get arsenic in your rice. Lead also. Lead peas are very good at detoxifying the ground of lead. And so pea protein, almost invariably, all plant-based pea proteins have a little bit of lead in them. And that's why they often show up on California's Prop 65 with a warning. This product contains lead. Well, it contains so little that you can't find it, but there's enough that, I mean, not that you can't find it. It's enough there so it'll show up on a test, but it's not enough to actually cause medical, physical problems. But avoiding dairy, gluten, and often eggs are a trigger as well. Avoiding processed foods, added sugar, anything that has an artificial color or flavor in, all these are poisons for people with autoimmune disease. Alcohol is another inflammatory that you don't want to take when you have problems with inflammation. I think we have a caller.
Indeed we do. I've got Steve on the line there. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, good morning.
Hey there.
Hey, listen, doctor, I've heard your show several times. You're certainly an interesting fella. And I wanted to run a couple of things by you here.
What's so, that, Steve?
Well, a friend and I were both suffering from similar conditions at the same time, which was fatigue and dizziness here lately, starting 3 weeks ago. At the same time. And I'm wondering, you don't think, you know, we're having a massive oak tree spawning right now. I mean, the entire Southeast, every oak tree is doing its thing right now.
Yes.
I have the fuzzies in 2 foot drifts in my yard. I live down here in the tree and bomb. We're ranchers. I have 38 oak trees in my front yard. And dude, these things are piled up in drifts. And the pollen is pervasive. It's all over everything.
Yes, it's so amazing.
Yeah, can we have an immune response to this right now? And, you know, the body's fighting an allergen and making immunoglobulin? Or what's up? Can we be sensitive to this?
Absolutely. Not everybody has specific airborne allergy to it, but the amount of particulate that's coming down from these trees just layers it on. Yeah. And so you have to deal with the challenge of that. So anybody who's dealing with that level of pollen, like we all are right now, using a neti pot is a great idea just to clean out some of the debris. There's so much sticking to your mucous membranes that it really helps to clean it out.
My sister recommended that. That makes a lot of sense. Go ahead.
And then supporting your system so you don't react too much to it. Quercetin calms your mast cells. Bromelain, proteolytic enzymes, like proteozyme is one I use, Wobenzyme, bromelain, papain, but any enzymes help to decrease the amount of sticky globulin. N-acetylcysteine helps to thin the mucus layer. Lots of water, you know, up your water intake by another liter just to push it through the system.
Okay, so let me hear you. So neti pot, maybe a little saline solution, intake our hydration. And what were the other treatments, like Claritin, or did you name?
Well, you could, yeah, absolutely. You can use an over the counter antihistamine like Claritin or Zyrtec. You can use quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, 500 milligrams twice a day. Very safe. It's really stabilizes the mast cell, so you don't get the allergy. Vitamin C helps also to stabilize the system. N-acetylcysteine, amino acid, 600 milligrams of that twice a day acts like, actually it works better than guaifenesin for loosening up the mucus.
Okay. Now, I'm not exhibiting with a lot of mucus. It's
okay.
Fatigue. It's this fatigue, doctor. Like, they've turned your volume down, man, to 4. Incredible.
Yes. It just, it's using your whole system to support you through the issue. So debulk, get rid of the pollen, take enzymes, that helps chew up the pollen too. And so you might find you get a little bit better, but it's going to take your body just to recover. You have to walk through this like wall of pollen.
Gotcha. So this is like an act of nature, you know, this time of year.
Yeah.
It's boom. It's like an earthquake or a tsunami or a volcano. You know, I mean, you're not getting away from it, man. It's happening in this area, and here it is.
That's right.
Okay. Now, listen, fantastic. Thank you. I got so much information from that. One other question, if you don't mind.
What's up, Steve?
Now, I happened to be going to see my cardiologist last week, and I told him about the dizziness. He took me off of Tamulosin and told me it was a beta blocker. It was making me dizzy. It was adding to this. It actually was the dizziness. Now,
are you feeling less dizzy off of the medication?
Oh boy, am I! I mean, night and day. Like
Tamsulosin is an alpha blocker. An alpha adrenergic blockers are associated with dizziness. So the other thing is though, when you have the histamine on board with the allergies triggering your systems, you actually have an increase in adrenaline, and that can increase your dizziness too. Glad you're feeling better off the Tamsulosin.
Oh, let me tell you, it was cascading. You are so right, sir. You are so right. So I feel so much. Now,
Steve,
if I'm going to replace Tamsulosin and... Yes, sir.
I must move on. I have two more callers, but I think call back again. Tell us how you're doing as you work through this.
I will. Thank you very much for your information. Y'all have a great morning. What a great station. See you now.
You too. Take care, bud.
Thank
Please
you.
Stop by the tip jar.
Absolutely. Ching, ching. I've got Gloria and Leon on the line. Let's go to Gloria. And we've got about seven more minutes to go. So what you got for us, Gloria?
Good morning.
Hi there.
So my husband, he went on a trip. He came back home. I always seclude him to make sure he doesn't have COVID. But he did come down with a cold. We thought it was a cold. He's now had a high fever for since Monday, so now it's like 7 days. He did he had a phone call with his doctor. They put him on cough medicine, and then it just seemed like he was getting worse. And then his temperature really was like 102 maybe. Then with the Tylenol was coming down, and then I said, you need to go and physically see somebody so that we know it's not in your lungs. So he did that, and they said, it's not in your lungs, so it's all in his head. So they told him to stop taking the cough medicine, so now he's taking bentonzonate, something like that, and it's a pill, and he can take Tylenol, but he still has a temperature. I mean, it's like it'll go down when he takes the Tylenol, but then like last night it went up to 99.1, and it's just like at the tip of his head. So I just think it's unusual.
It is. Viruses don't usually have fevers that go on that long, so it's possibly bacterial. And having a physical evaluation does make sense. And if it persists, I'd say go and get looked at again.
Okay. So nothing, because I called my sister-in-law. She's an ex-nurse, retired. Mm-hmm. And she said it just has to play out. They said that they couldn't test him for the flu or RSV because you have to do that within the first 2 days. But
that's not true.
You know,
they just didn't want to do it.
That's what the nurse said at the fast track, whatever. They said you can only be tested the first 2 days. And so that doesn't make sense because the first 2 days you think you're really coming down with the cold. And not
right, the right. No, she. I don't know what disinformation she was giving you, but that was not accurate.
Okay. So how many more days should we wait before he actually goes back in to see somebody? If he this temperature persists,
if he just has a temperature and nothing else, I don't know how soon he needs to go back in. If he's getting worse, if he has more upper respiratory symptoms or anything like that, I'd say get reevaluated because it could be a pneumonia that's causing persistent fever.
But it's not in his lungs.
Oh, that's good.
There's no fluid in his lungs. It's all in his head. Like his nose, and the pill that he was given is for cough, but I told him you need to cough up whatever infection you have in your sinuses, but...
he may benefit from doing a neti pot and rinsing the stuff out of his sinuses. Hard to tell because I haven't seen him. And generally, the usual stuff I talk about for supporting the immune system and supporting the person are the really good things to do. Somebody who has a apparent respiratory infection, take an inch of ginger, grate it up, put it in a quart of water, boil it. And then do that for 5 minutes. The last minute, throw in a half teaspoon of cayenne, take it off the stove, crush in a clove of garlic, put in a tablespoon of honey and the juice of a whole lemon and drink that quart of water. You can filter it if you want to. You can eat the ginger and garlic if you want to. But that is a great antiviral remedy.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You. Bye.
I think we have a moment for Leon.
We're down to just the last couple of seconds. If you got an email that you want to
I'll do that.
Rip on out.
Yes. So let's see. Oh, here's a question about cinnamon. Can cinnamon contain high levels of lead? Absolutely. In fact, there was something I just read recently about Sri Lankan or Ceylon cinnamon possibly having it. It's getting harder and harder to find out what foods are and are not contaminated. I think we should try and work on our state here in Florida and convince them to do what I know is happening in Iowa. One of my new clients moved down from Iowa and she has lead toxicity. Any food that she thinks is contaminated, she can send to the state of Iowa and they will test it and tell her whether or not it's contaminated. That's how we found out that her Ayurvedic and Chinese herbal supplements were her lead problem. She was being contaminated by the health things that she was taking. Real sad situation we have there because it's not getting screened on the way in. Our FDA is not checking stuff. And so we need a better system. In any event, I want to thank Irene for taking all the phone calls. I want to thank Bill for being production manager here at the studio. And I want to thank everybody at WMNF for supporting my show and this wonderful community. And I love all you healthy steppers. Please remember the station when you think about it and stop by the tip jar. And thank you again for listening to the show.
Well, and thank you, Doctor, for another wonderful show. And if people want to support, give us a call at 813-238-8001. And so until next Monday at 10 a.m., thank you for supporting and listening to the Healthy Steps Radio Show with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. And thank you, Irene, of course. So you're from your community conscience radio station. Stay safe, stay thoughtful, and know that you are loved. You have been listening to the Healthy Steps Radio Show with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa.
waiting for you like a dear friend is 5 minutes of NPR News, and then get ready for the Sustainable Living Show, hosted by the peerless duet of Annie Ellis and Tanya Vidovic. So until next Monday at 10 a.m., thank you for supporting and listening to the Healthy Steps Radio Show with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa, your community-conscious radio station. Stay safe, stay thoughtful, and know that you are loved.
Live.